is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Your practices have to be a balance between competitiveness and collaboration. So drills where guys are getting after one another, where it's intense and we're fighting and we're working hard to make each other better. And then let's do a drill where everybody's on the same team and we're doing a full court shooting drill. Let's see how many baskets we can make together.
Chris McHugh is in his seventh season as the head coach of the Washington and Lee University men's basketball program. The Generals have posted a 99-49 overall record during his tenure. McHugh was previously an assistant coach at Emory University. During his 4 years with the Eagles, the program registered an 80-31 overall record and made four straight NCAA tournament appearances, including a run to the Elite Eight in 2014. Prior to coaching with the Eagles, McHugh was an assistant coach at Connecticut College during the 2012-2013 season and an assistant at Mount St. Mary College from 2009 to 2012. Chris graduated from Washington and Lee in 2009 and was a four-year letter winner at guard for the Generals men's basketball program. He played in 101 games with 72 starts, leading the team in assists his junior and senior seasons. Hey, Hoopheads, Dr. Dish Basketball is ringing in the new year with big savings. This January, buy one Dr. Dish, get one free, or unlock exclusive single-unit discounts during their 2024 Super Sale. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Darrell Nelson, overseas pro player and author of Tour de Hoops, Bigger Than Basketball, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Chris McHugh, men's basketball head coach at Washington and Lee University.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with, eventually, I think, my co-host Jason Sunkel. But we are pleased to be joined by Chris McHugh, head men's basketball coach at Washington and Lee University. Chris, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, thanks so much for having me on.
Thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that goes back to as far as I can remember. I think, I just saw the picture because it was just LeBron James's birthday, I think, and he had that famous picture where he's near that little tyke hoop with the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that one.
Very, 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 very less famous picture of a young Chris McHugh, I think, with a basketball around that time of year and a little tyke hoop. And, you know, dating back to as far as I have memories, I remember having a ball in my hand and just always loving the game of basketball, which is kind of funny because, you know, my dad was a wrestler, football player, track athlete at Penn State. My mom didn't play much basketball either. So I don't know how basketball became from the beginning my sort of passion and favorite sport, but you know, that was always the case. And I grew up in a small town in New Jersey, Chatham, New Jersey, a wonderful place to grow up, and really got into the game right away. And I played all different sports growing up, which was, I think, something that I look back on very fondly, and I'm very grateful for that experience. But basketball is always my favorite of the sports. And, you know, just starting from right in the driveway and spending all sorts of hours out there by myself or having my dad or my brothers rebound, and just fell in love with the game from the beginning and loved to play. And had some really good youth coaches, you know, through my time, and like I said, played a little bit of soccer, played baseball, tried all these different sports, loved doing that, even played soccer seriously through high school and baseball up until high school. But basketball was always my number one passion and a game that just resonated with me the most that I love to play.
Do you know why? I mean, I think about that in terms of my own upbringing, and I played just like you. I played everything, and I don't know if I could accurately articulate what it was about basketball that kind of drew me in. I think part of it was I could do it by myself, and so I could go out in the driveway and work on it. But when I was 5 or 6, I think basketball was already my favorite, and I don't know if I could explain why. So I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about why basketball over those other things.
Such a good question. I just think the nonstop action is part of it, you know? And I mean, I soccer again was my other big sport, and you could play a soccer game, and nothing against soccer. It's a wonderful game. It's the world's game, but you can go a long time without really touching the ball or scoring a goal. And basketball, you're constantly in the mix. You're constantly touching it, exchanging with teammates, scoring often. So I think just the fast paced nature and how connected you are to your teammates at all times on both ends of the floor, I think I just, from jump, really enjoyed that. And like you said, you know, the ability to just the access to basketball, all you need is a ball and a hoop. So even to this day, my sanctuary is I'll go find myself, you know, we've had a couple losses or I'm going through something personally. I love just going and grabbing a ball and shooting hoops. Like I do think that translates to the love of the larger sport, is that you can just go out and take some time and then work on your ball handling, work on your shooting, work on your game. You don't need anybody else. So I think that was a key part of it. And just, I mean, what's not to love? I mean, I love the game, and I love how, like I said, how up and down it is. And you're constantly in motion. You're constantly making decisions. And I just think it's so entertaining and fun and competitive to play. And yeah, it's just always been near and dear to my heart, obviously.
Absolutely. I think hearing you talk and just kind of processing my own feelings about the game and talking about that up and down and nonstop action, which theoretically, right, you have in soccer, right? Theoretically, there's lots of movement. The game's constantly going. You're making decisions. There's a lot of spacing similarities. And yet, I know as a kid, I had no interest in participating in a game where the score could end up being 0-0 or 1-0. Like, just the idea of basketball, that you have the action, but not only that, but you also have the ability to score. And then I think about, like, so my kids, Chris, I have a 20-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 14-year-old, and all my kids have dabbled in lots of different sports and whatever. And so I always try to look at it from the perspective of, okay, if I'm a kid, what about a sport attracts me? And you think about, now I'm 53 years old, so my era is maybe slightly different than yours, but when I was a kid, everybody played baseball. I mean, if you were a kid, you picked up a bat and a glove and you played. And like, my son played maybe, I don't know, he played maybe 3 seasons of baseball. Neither one of my daughters ever put on a glove or picked up a bat or anything. And then it's like, I remember going to practice for baseball and just being like, why would any kid ever want to play this sport? Like, it's just, you go to practice, you're just sitting around the whole time. The only thing that's really fun to do is hit. And if you're lucky in a baseball practice, maybe you get to hit for 5 minutes, maybe out of an hour. And then you go to the games and you just stand around and the ball's never hit to you. And it's just basketball to me. And I think this is why lacrosse has become more popular too, because it's similar in that it's a little bit more high scoring than soccer. But it's just, I just think the action, I think you hit it 100% right, that when you start looking at what is attractive to a kid, I think basketball, you have the action and then you have the scoring piece of it, which maybe you don't get in some of those other sports. So it's just, to me, it's the perfect combination.
Yep. And I think maybe not to pile on these other terrific sports anymore, but the weather, you know, it's never raining. Absolutely. In the gym. It's never raining.
That
in the
is
gym.
True. And you will appreciate that even more as a parent when you have to go and sit at some soccer games and some lacrosse games. You will really appreciate how nice it is from a basketball standpoint. And then, of course, outdoor basketball, which we talk about here on the podcast. When I was a kid, I played a ton of outdoor basketball, not just on the driveway, but just going and playing high-level pickup games all over the place. And unfortunately, that's something that has gone away. So as a player, I remember we used to eat dinner when I was a kid at 5:30. I remember like looking out my window all the time to see whether it was going to be raining or not, because I wanted to go up to the courts and play at 6 o'clock, that's when the games would start, and just looking out my window and checking out, okay, what do the clouds look like? Is it going to rain? Is it not going to rain? And kids today don't experience that at all, because we have a lot more gym access, thankfully. But yeah, you're 100% right. Being in a gym is much better than being on a 40-degree rainy soccer field. I can definitely vouch for that 100%. So,
yeah, well, I'm glad you said that too. And that was similar to kind of my experience growing up with, you know, having to, and this sounds like I'm dating myself again here, but you had to, growing up in a small town with friends, and you had to know everybody's home phone number, landline phone number.
Right.
And you guys, we had to pick a time. We had to check, how's the weather looking? And we're meeting at 4 o'clock to go play down at the playground and organizing it by ourselves and keeping score by ourselves. There was something special about those opportunities that, you know, like you said, is a little bit different nowadays with AAU and, you know, adults kind of running everything all the time.
Yeah. Different world without question. I say all the time that I'm super thankful for the time that I grew up in. And unfortunately for my own kids, I feel like they've missed out on some of the things that I feel like were some of the best moments of my life, just playing pickup sports in the neighborhood or playing playground basketball when I'm 15, 16 years old with adults and high school players and college players and all those kinds of things that kids, they miss out on those things. So let's shift it back to you as a player. As you start to take the game more seriously, as you get up into high school, how'd you go about getting better? Because again, even in the time when you were growing up, the training business, I think, exploded probably after you sort of get through your playing career. And how did you put together a plan? Did you have a plan? What did you do to just get better? How much of a balance was it, pickup games versus I'm in the gym by myself working? Just talk to me a little bit about what you did to improve yourself as a player when you were in high school.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, the hard part about high school was I was, when I was about, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, my skill set was pretty good. And, you know, I think at that time, I was pretty competitive with anybody. And then everybody got bigger, faster, stronger than I. So I had to figure out a new way to be successful once superior athletes came into the picture. But, you know, from my standpoint, what I thought about in terms of my development as a player is really working out, you know, a lot of times by myself in the backyard, in the driveway, or, you know, with my dad rebounding, or like I said, either of my two younger brothers, and having an imagination about, you know, working on my game, trying to imagine different scenarios, trying to put together a workout on my own, right? Rather than someone prescribing, you know, I didn't have a trainer growing up. I didn't have someone saying, hey, you got to do X, Y, Z in this order and these drills. I had to sort of come up with, okay, how am I going to work on my game? How am I going to translate these, working on these skills to, you know, game environments and what I can do well. So I know that I spent a lot of time, you know, in the backyard, using my imagination, working on my skills, playing, like I said, you know, calling up your friends in town and getting together and playing 2-on-2, playing 3-on-3, getting reps. So, you know, I think that you gotta really love the game to get better at it. And I like we talked about, why do you love basketball? Well, I just had so much fun getting in the driveway and getting better and just seeing progress and seeing success. When you go out there and you're, you know, you work on your free throws and you can't just do it once and you can't just do it haphazardly. It's, you go out there and you work on it every day or every other day and put in the time, but you see success and you see progress. And I think that's so much fun and such a fun thing about development is that you put in the time and you see yourself get better in the sport. So, you know, and like I said, I had really good coaches and didn't play much AAU, but played kind of YMCA ball and then travel ball and, you know, middle school team. You know, I think I was coached well and had a really good training towards, hey, these are the things you have to do, the little things in basketball towards winning, right? We want to do, you know, it's not always glamorous to do all the little things in basketball that add up to success, right? And especially, like I said, as I developed and I was kind of a puny young guy and, you know, entering the varsity basketball team in ninth grade, I was maybe 120 pounds soaking wet, You better know how to be down in the stance. You better know how to box out somebody bigger than you. You better know how to rotate defense when, you know, the offense has an advantage. And you better know how to get your shot off quick and, you know, create separation and change speeds and all those things that you have to kind of problem solve and figure out. And I had great coaches all along the way, great high school coach, Todd Irvin. You know, I think that was all part of my development. And then piecing that all together, you have those times where you're alone working on your game, and then you have to translate, okay, these are the things that happen in games, and now I have to work in such a way that, hey, the skill of dribbling or the skill of shooting a pull-up jump shot, all right, now how and why and when am I going to use that in a game, which I always just found fascinating, of thinking through the sport and thinking about the kind of decision-making aspects that you face all the time in basketball.
Yeah, which sometimes, again, if you're working by yourself, right, that's, I think, sometimes a challenge is to figure out, hey, how can I work on something that translates to what I'm actually doing in games? And I just think, looking back again on my own experience, training and improving and getting better is so much more sophisticated because there's just so much more out there. I've said this on the podcast numerous times. Like when I was playing, I did basically one workout if I was by myself, and then I had another workout that if I was lucky enough to find somebody else to work out with or that wanted to do something, I'd have a shooting workout and maybe we'd do some one-on-one or whatever it might have been. But I didn't take it quite to the level that you just described where like, okay, how does this translate? I was like, okay, I got these drills. These are the basic things that I'm working on. I just kind of kept doing those things over and over again. And now I look at just the variety of different ways that kids have today to be able to get better, just to be able to have the resources of going to YouTube or going to social media to be able to find ideas. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that I'm dubious of its value, but there's also a lot of really great stuff out there that players can take and coaches can take to be able to help themselves to get better. And it's just interesting, again, how much things have changed and how different it is. And it's interesting just to hear you talk about, yeah, I really tried to look at what I was doing and seeing how that translated into the game. Because obviously that's ultimately what we want to do in any practice, right? As a coach, as a player, you want what you're doing when you're practicing to translate to eventually having success in the games. And so I think that's obviously the way that the game and coaching has evolved and changed, is that there's a lot more emphasis on, hey, is what we're doing actually helping us in a game versus, hey, I really like this drill. It's a cool drill, but it doesn't necessarily translate. Let me ask you about your high school experience. When you look back, you have a favorite memory of high school basketball, something that stands out to you? Could be an actual game memory, could be just something that happened off the floor, teammates. Just what do you think about when you think about your high school basketball experience?
Yeah, I'll give you two answers. I think the first one would be how amazing it was. My public high school, I mean, the guys that I grew up with since we could, you know, we're first starting to walk to kindergarten are the guys that I played with in high school, and that experience of playing with some of your best friends. And maybe most notably the opportunity to play with my younger brother, Matt, who's 2 years younger than me. So we got to play 2 years together on varsity. And I talked about this at his wedding. It's amazing when you look back, how special a time that is.
Yeah.
You know, take me back to, coming every day, and you get to be with some of your best friends in the world, including your brother. And we're out there competing every day and representing the town that we grew up in and where our family is. And that's really special opportunity. So the times together, with guys, you know, my high school team happened to be some of my best buddies and playing together and competing. And then of course my brother. And then, you know, if I had to pick a specific memory, my junior year, we had this amazing run and, a great group of, upperclassmen, seniors and juniors together. And we beat, we had a packed house for this, state playoff game in New Jersey, and we're playing Newark Tech, and they were pretty heavily favored. And, we had basically the whole student body was there in the stands, and it was just an unbelievable atmosphere. You know, just people hanging from the rafters and, so loud and an incredible moment and experience. And we were able to kind of knock them off. And of course, the student section charges the floor and mobs everybody, and we're celebrating. And, that win was an all-time win and, kind of encapsulated you know, a good run of a really good team and being together and having a great moment. And some of the videos from, you know, the charge of the court are all time memories.
All right. So let me ask you this. Here's a question for you. So you've got video of all that. When you think about your memories, because I'm sure you've watched the video plenty of times, when you think about those memories, do you remember the memory directly from what you saw, or now has it kind of been almost replaced by the video because the video is what you have looked at or what you've seen? Does that question make any sense?
That makes sense. And I remember that in person. I remember that being there. And I think one of the reasons too is because, so there's a pretty funny story. One of my buddies that charged the court, and now it's a mass of people coming down the bleachers, right? It's perfect. a total mayhem coming down. But if you focus on one of my buddies, Ryan McMahon, is running down. He's running down the bleachers. He runs onto the court, and as the whistle blows and the buzzer hits, and we've thrown up the ball, and we're all running, and he's running off. The referee. Sees the stampede coming right for him, and you can watch this on video. He looks around. He goes, "Oh my goodness, I got to get out of Dodge." And so he turns and he just books it, and he's just trying to run off the court. And my buddy Ryan is coming from the opposite angle, and they don't see each other. And I'm laughing thinking about it.
Oh my gosh.
He's running down, and I'm telling you what, the ref, I think they used to call it like de-cleated in football. You know, when you get tackled and your feet go over your head. He got knocked so hard. The ref was running so fast. He got knocked way off balance. And then you just see a sea of, I don't know what happened. He survived. He's doing well. He's okay. But it was a miracle he didn't get trampled over as the ref knocked him over. And I remember seeing that on video. But to answer your question again, I remember being in that moment. And, you know, that was when I was in high school, and it was the 2004. You know, like you said, thankfully it wasn't Facebook. You know, nobody, that hadn't really happened yet. I don't think that was in college.
Right.
So a lot of those memories, it wasn't all about everybody taking a picture and video every second. So I remember that distinctly, but it was nice to have that video so we could laugh at Ryan's expense when he got nailed by the referee running off the court, running for dear life.
That's good stuff. That is really funny. When you think about, again, something that if that hadn't been captured on video, it would have disappeared. But because it's been captured, it's part of the lore of that whole situation, which is very cool that it got captured. What about your high school coach when you think about his influence on you? And I don't know if you were thinking about coaching at that point as a high school player, kind of where your mindset was, but when you look back on it and you think about his influence on you both as a player and as a coach, what are some things that come to mind?
Absolutely. Discipline and toughness. Todd Irvin, who's a, I think he might be up over 600 wins now or close. He definitely got to 500. So he's been around Chatham, New Jersey, and a great coach and obviously longtime success. And I mean, the culture and the identity of the program that he built from, you know, me watching that from, I remember being a kid and playing in the rec leagues when the high school guys would come down and coach. And
yeah, absolutely.
You knew through the pipeline coming up to play for Chatham High School boys basketball, you better be ready to defend or you're not going to play. And it's going to be man-to-man defense, and we're going to do it the right way. We'll be hard-nosed. You know, there was a degree of freedom. And even at that time when the game wasn't as versatile maybe as it is now, there was still a good degree, you know, a good degree of freedom and moving the basketball and reading and reacting and playing off one another. But you're going to do exactly what we asked for defensively, guarding the ball, getting through screens, you know, hedge and recover ball screens and all that. So just the discipline and toughness that comes from having to be on task on that end of the floor at all times. And Irv was, he's a fun guy. He's a funny guy, and he was always himself, and he has a really dry wit and a really sarcastic humor. And, you know, you get to know that over time and he'd probably be maybe sheepish at me for saying this, but you figure out over time that that's his love language, right? To tease.
Right, right.
So, yep, you know, one of the things that he did my first year, right? So I said, it was certainly not because of my physical abilities, but maybe this was portending to why I became a head coach, you know, a basketball coach, is that, like I said, I was maybe 5'3", 120 pounds, soaking wet my freshman year, but I got to play on the varsity probably because I was, you know, a pretty instinctual player that had been well coached and then could make good decisions. And I wore like a cutoff sleeve shirt under my jersey the games.
Right.
And I'm telling you, he would not let me hear the end of it until I went full out t-shirt, you know, for the rest of the year because of the let's say the absence of the glamour bicep muscles that I had at there that time. Go. So he was ragging on me just like it was like the older guys ragging on me. So after that, I was like, man, I guess I got a choice here. I guess I'm going to get used to shooting with a t-shirt on because I can't take this abuse. And then, you know, it was all in good fun, all good natured. But you understand that he, you know, that's his personality. And that's how he shows that he cares about you, is that he's going to make you take a ribbing, and you're going to have to take it and grow from it and have fun with it, not take yourself too seriously and all that. So great guy, cared about his players, and, you know, learned a lot from him and really enjoyed my experience in high school basketball.
All right, so let's move to the college experience. When did you first think about playing college basketball? Was it something that you dreamed of growing up? When did you decide that it was going to be something that was realistic, that you wanted to pursue? And then just talk a little bit about the recruitment, your decision to go to Washington Lee, and how you ended up there, and what the process was all about for you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, definitely. I mean, I think it's that process of getting older and kind of coming to grips with reality. I'm sure when I was, you know, 8 years old, it was going to start for Duke and be the starting point guard for the New York Knicks. And then you start to look around and say, well, you know, I'm not going to give up on my dreams, but let's make sure we have somewhat attainable future here. So, you know, certainly as I got into high school, I knew, and, you know, I was a good player. I got to play varsity early. I got to play in a good public school program in New Jersey. It was competitive. I always felt like I could aspire to the college ranks and play, certainly, at least at the, you know, maybe if not at the highest level of Division I, you know, somewhere where it was competitive. So always wanted to continue my career, and play. That was, you know, I just, when you sit down and thought about the college process hard, and I did apply to a few schools that were sort of schools to just go to academically, and bigger schools where, you know, the only thing I was going to be doing on the team was filling up the water bottles. But, you know, when I really sat down and thought about, okay, what is it that I really want to do? I'm 18 years old. Am I really ready to give up the fun of competition, the great lessons that you learn and experiences and relationships that you have from being on a team? And when I sat down and thought about that, it was a clear answer that I wanted to continue to play, and I wanted to take that risk and take that challenge on to see if I could play at the next level. So, you know, as I got going in my career, it was, I was, academics were really important in my family, and, you know, Chatham was a great place to grow up and had great, I went to great public schools and was taught by wonderful teachers. So, you know, I did pretty well, in school. So I knew that, okay, I want to find the right balance here of a great academic school where I can also play basketball. And, my three choices were really, on that front were Denison, Hamilton, and Washington Lee University. And it was funny. So with WNL, there was a player named Greg Benneman, who's a year older than I, one of my best friends. We grew up together. We played in high school together. He was a year older. He was a far bigger star than I was. I like to tease him that, you know, he gets all the headlines. I'm behind the scenes here, making him look good, putting the right pass in the post, always finding him, always so he can get all the press clippings in the local newspaper. And then so Greg was this great player. He was a year older. Washington Lee recruited Greg. He ended up going to WNL. And like I said, he was a year older than I. And when the coaches that recruited, or the, you know, Adam Hutchinson, Ryan Kadlubowski at the time was the assistant, Adam Hutchinson was the head coach, when they recruited Greg, he was one of their top guys, and they noticed me as a junior, and they said, all right, well, he's pretty good. We're going to keep an eye on him. And kept developing, and you know, got down to my senior year and kind of went and visited all those places and got a feel for the culture and, you know, the guys on the team and the schools themselves. And ultimately WNL stood out to me because of the fantastic academics. I was excited by the basketball program, which hadn't had a lot of success prior to Coach Hutchinson. It had been a kind of a tough stretch of a couple decades and not much winning, but, you know, kind of excited by the vision of let's try and build something and get a great education and, you know, a little bit of warmer weather down here in Virginia. And everybody on campus was really friendly. You know, there's a thing on WNL's campus called the speaking tradition, which is a very simple tradition that basically anybody you go by on campus, you say hello. And that's a little different than driving on the New Jersey Turnpike during rush hour with traffic. So you come down and get a little Southern hospitality on WNL's campus and fell in love with just how friendly and kind everybody was and guys on the team. And obviously having a guy like Greg, who was somebody I grew up with, who was a connection to the place that was, you know, had success in his first year as a player and really enjoyed WNL. It was a fun place to go to school as well. So felt like I could get that whole experience from the academics, the social life, and then the basketball program where I could come and compete and hopefully make an impact right away.
Going into it, what did you think in terms of what you wanted academically and career-wise heading into college?
Really good question. I don't think I had a firm view of what that looked like, and that fits really well with the liberal arts because you're going to take a bunch of different classes, and you know, it's ironic now, I guess, but I ended up being a politics major because I love some of the classes that I took my first year. I had some great professors and they were really engaging, and you know, kind of I feel like a lot of people take sort of business or econ, and it was something, you know, a path a little less traveled to take politics. So I didn't know what that was going to lead to. I never really thought I was going to run for office or get into the political world, but I enjoyed the classes, and you know, everything in coaching, there could be some politics in coaching too. So you know, a little carry over there. But in terms of one of the things that I loved to do growing up and even into college was I loved to write. And because I love sports, I kind of like sports writing. So I thought to myself, and you know, and WNL actually has a school of journalism where they offer sports journalism class, which is one of my favorite classes that I took here. And I always thought that might be my path. You know, I love to write. I feel like I'm a pretty good writer. I think I know sports because I played them. What a cool way to, you know, go to games and, you know, be a beat writer and follow a team. And ultimately, somewhere along the line, you know, there was kind of a light bulb moment for me in the course of the 4 years at WNL, is like, well, just kind of like that decision to go play and be a college basketball player. Well, do you want to be in the arena competing? And that's the idea of that being, you know, being a coach and being involved with the team, or do you want to be the person writing about all those folks that are taking that chance being in the arena? And ultimately to me, it was like, well, you know, writing about sports is the next best thing, but I think the best thing might just be staying actively involved in sports. And basketball was my passion, was my dream. So, you know, I got right into coaching. And I mentioned Ryan Kadlubowski earlier as the assistant coach who recruited me to come to WNL and play on the team. Well, my senior year, he got a head coaching job at Mount St. Mary College. And you know how I'm sure this is, you know, a common refrain on the Hoopshead pod, absolutely, but it's a really absolutely small fraternity, right? So it's getting to know people in the business. So my assistant coach when I played was Ryan, and he recruited me. And by my senior year in college, he had got a head coaching job at Mount St. Mary College in New York. And right as I was graduating, he was looking for an assistant, and the rest was history. And that was my first coaching job. I worked there for 3 years, and that's how I got my foot in the door in the coaching business, was working for Ryan Kadlubowski, and a great coach there. And the rest is, I haven't looked back since.
No, right away. I mean, as soon as you step foot in the door and had a couple of days under your belt, did you immediately know that you had made the right decision?
I did, because Ryan was so great and he was so trusting of me because our prior relationship, and he let me get my hands in everything right away, you know, and that was really, I'm so grateful for that experience. It was just me and him. So there was nobody else on staff. So my hands were in recruiting, scouting, organizing practice. You know, when we're breaking down two ends of the floor doing drills and practice, I'm running my own session. I'm 22 years old. I'm hardly older. You know, the guys on the team have more facial hair than I do. So to get into it right away and be really immersed in it was, you know, definitely falling in love with, and it's the next closest thing to being a player, right? That rush and that adrenaline and that competition that you feel as a player. Well, coaching is the next closest thing. And, you know, I loved being a part of a team up there and building that program up. And I think I pretty much knew right away that coaching was going to be something that I really enjoyed. And really, I guess more than anything, that I hoped I could turn into a career. And it's such a great job. I mean, I have the best job in the world. It's a hard business. And I feel for younger people and younger coaches in the business, just because there's so many people out there following their passion and doing this. And there's only so many colleges and there's only so many jobs. So I think I felt right away, wow, this is great. I love this. This is fun. Can I make this a more permanent thing? Will I ever be a head coach? You know, will I ever get to there? And I'm just so grateful for the coaches that I got to work for along my ride. So like I said, Ryan was tremendous, you know, bringing me in right away, bringing me under his wing. He's such a good teacher of the game. I just had such a great background. You know, he played at the University of Rochester, and that was Mike Neer was the coach there forever. And a lot of what he taught at the University of Rochester, we tried to bring to Mount St. Mary College. So I got a great, you know, their language and how they break down drills and how they approach the game. I got such a great learning experience there. I then got to, after 3 years there, I got to work for Tom Satrin at Connecticut College. Tom, an excellent coach, such a cerebral guy, really knows the game, really knows people and situations. Like, he has just such an ability. I grew so much. I only got to spend 1 year with him, but I grew so much for how intentional he was to his approach every day. He could just always understand people, understand who you needed to give some support to, who you needed to challenge, what do we need to do as a team, how do we figure this out. He just had such a thoughtful process to how he went about everything in coaching. Everything was intentional. And then from there, I got to work for Jason Zimmerman, who I know has been on the Hoopheads podcast, because when you sent me this email inviting me, you listed Jason Zimmerman as one of the famous guests that we've
Zim's,
had on.
Zim's been on twice with us. So I actually met him in person down at the Jay Billis camp. And it was right after we started. So that must have been 2000. It was either 2018 or 2019. I can't remember, but met him in person. And he was great to me. I just mentioned it. Hey, I got a podcast. Like, yeah, hit me up. And so, yeah, we've had him on, twice. And actually when they, I think it was a season or two ago, and they played up here at Case Western, you know, popped in and said hello to Jason when he was here in person. So yeah, great guy, obviously a great coach, and I'll let you take it from there.
Sure. No doubt. Yeah. That's it. So, you know, then after a year with Tom at Connecticut College, 4 years at Emory with Jason Zimmerman, and that was unforgettable. And that was, I'm so grateful for that 4 years. And, you know, as you know, from talking to him, this man was put on the planet to be a college basketball coach. You know, I could see myself, you know, and a lot of other folks, hey, you know, good coach, but maybe could have done other things. There is no other scenario. If his life played out 1,000 times, he was always going to be a college basketball coach. That guy lives, eats, breathes it, knows everybody, everybody loves him. And, it was so great to work for him, his infectious energy, just the standard he set for the program, the expectations of excellence, and his, how he set that standard with coming in every day and, being enthusiastic, and his approach to the game, and his fearlessness of how he coached, and just, you know, how he built such a culture of, relationships within the program and alums, and, you know, that 4 years was unforgettable, and seeing how, you know, he and all the great players that have come through at Emory over his time really built that into a national power of a program, and getting to see that up close and see that in person was so impactful for me, and trying to aspire to that, you know, now as a head coach myself, the program that he's built and all the success they've had on and off the court there.
Hey, coach, want to take your team to the next level this season? Introducing Game Changer, the ultimate game day assistant with tools to give you a winning advantage. With Game Changer, you can track stats, keep score, and even live stream games, all for free. Get the stats and crucial game video you need to lead your team to victory, all from the palm of your hand. Coach smarter this season with Game Changer. Download Game Changer today on iOS or Android, and make this season one to remember. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
All right, before we get to the process of getting the head job back at your alma mater, let's talk a little bit about just the different experiences that you had under each of the coaches that you were fortunate enough to coach under. because I think as a player, right, you kind of have this perspective of, right, I played for my high school coach, I played for my college coach, and those are kind of the ways that you then, I think, start to see the game. And when you get an opportunity then to expand and see different ways that different coaches go about doing the same thing. So maybe I have an approach one way for offense, and then another coach has another totally different approach for offense. And you kind of learn that there's multiple different ways to be able to win or to be able to have success. So maybe just talk about a little bit how those different influences kind of influenced you and sort of how you took bits and pieces from each of the stops that you had.
Sure. No, great question. Yeah. So like I said, like I mentioned with Ryan at Mount St. Mary, you know, at that time, and, you know, one of his mentors was Mike Neer, who, shout out to Coach Neer, who's actually also a WNL alum and a Hall of Fame basketball player at WNL, but was the Hall of Fame Rochester head coach. And I know that, you know, Coach Neer was influential in Coach Kadlubowski as a player, and he worked for him as an assistant. So getting there and seeing how they do things and their approach, and, you know, and at that time, a really amazing emphasis on how to play through the post in basketball. I mean, just the way they taught it, the way, you know, posting up and getting the ball inside, how you move off it, different angles, how you seal, how you play for the lob, you know, all those sorts of things that, but playing sort of like a post-centric, you know, offense was really cool to see and to learn. And seeing how Cad would in practice, how we would break that down and the different drills that we do, you know, and like I said, the carryover from, all right, we're working at these different skill concepts, and this is how we apply it to our offense or our defense. And just how good a teacher he was, you know, just in practice, just going through each rep and each drill, making sure guys understood it, see it. Hey, this is how we do it. This is how we demonstrate it. And this is how it applies to what we're doing. And then, you know, had the year with Coach Satrin at Connecticut College, and we had a really young team. We were playing in the NESCAC, which is a super competitive Division III conference, and we ran the Princeton offense. And I had never – we actually ran the triangle in college, and then, like I said, sort of the post-centric we call it the break, but offense with four round one offense with Mount St. Mary, and then Princeton offense with Connecticut College with a young team. And, you know, the one thing about the Princeton was it's such a good teacher of, you know, how to make decisions and how to play in space and how to read off your fellow teammates. And that was just a great thing for me to see and learn and see Todd up close, all the different ways the Princeton offense is used to exploit space and exploit, you know, matchups and different angles on the floor and how you pass and move and keep the ball hot. And that was you know, just the verbiage and how the Princeton language and how you talk about things really helpful, because you see – not everybody runs full out Princeton like we did, but almost every offense has some element of it that you'll find. So in scouting, like even today, you know, my Princeton background, Princeton offense background from that time, you know, you see almost every team has maybe a set or two that is related to, you know, like coming up to the elbow and playing through point, you know, or different things of that nature. So sort of the language, the sets, the actions, the spacing that you get from that offense, carrying that over. And then at Emory, you know, Jason's obviously a Davidson player and Davidson coach. And so running their secondary break into transition and learning how to play fast and learning how to play more of a motion offense. So I got a great, you know, if you're just talking about the offensive side of the ball, I know we're focusing on that right now, but he, you know, just how different each of the spots were in terms of how we played offense and how we approached attacking basketball wise, and you know, playing fast and playing motion offense, just how we were totally bought into that, you know, and learning that. And, you know, our approach was, if you want to play fast, that's a brand, and that's something you got to do all the time. You got to run the floor hard. You got to win your race every time down the floor. It's not something you do haphazardly, or you're dipping your toe in the proverbial water. You cannonball and you go for it and you move the ball fast and you attack and you try and get looks early in transition, and you flow from there and you play kind of advantage basketball where you've, you know, you've created angles, you're going to attack fast and take that shot when it's there, or create a better look for your teammates. So you know, each of the different spots had a different approach to how we attacked offensively, and I think tried to incorporate some of each of those things along the way. And, you know, from a larger perspective of each of them as a mentor, like I said, Cad's, you know, Coach Cad Lebowski and his ability to teach so well, and how we, you know, broke down drills and how it all carried over. You know, Coach Satran, just how intentional he was about how he thought through his messaging to the team, and how he developed guys, and how he mentored guys, and how he thought about different situations, and how are people going to react, and how's our team going to react, and what we need to anticipate. And then, you know, Coach Zimmerman's just, infectious energy for the game, his relentlessness, his fearlessness, how he, you know, just instills confidence in everybody in his program, that the sense of belief in what we do and the passion with which we go about things. So trying to incorporate a little bit of the best of all those great coaches, and try and take a little bit here and kind of infuse that with my own personality and let it roll from there.
I mean, absolutely. To be able to be exposed to all those successful ways of doing different things. And obviously we could take that through probably every aspect of the program and how each of them did it a little bit differently. And then, as you said, you take the best from each one, what you like, what you feel comfortable with, and you meld it with your personality. And then you are able to make that same imprint on your team and your program. When the Washington Lee job opens up, where were you in terms of your process for becoming a head coach? Had you already gone out and been actively looking for other head coaching jobs? Had you bet on other interviews? What was your level of readiness? Was it the fact that, hey, this is my alma mater, this is an opportunity I got to jump at? Just kind of where were you in the process of becoming a head coach at the time that this job becomes available and you eventually take it?
No question. That was 4 years into Emory. So I was then 8 years removed from being a college basketball player and graduating from WNL. By that time, I did have a bunch of head coaching interviews. So I think the timing was just serendipity, and it was perfect. And I was very, very fortunate and very blessed. But so at that time I had already had, a bunch of phone interviews, and then I think 3 or 4 full out head coaching Division III interviews. And there's nothing like the preparation of actually doing that. And I think it was humbling at the beginning, maybe in my earlier, my time in Emory, maybe about 5 or 6 years into my career when I did my first interview. And I remember hanging up the phone thinking, wow, I was not prepared for all those questions. I need to take a look at, more than anything else, is like, this is a head coaching interview, and I've always only ever been an assistant, right? And that's different.
Right.
And
absolutely,
when you're in charge, when you're in the head seat, it's your decision, and it's, what are you doing? And I think I had to then say, from that humbling first experience, all right, now I really have to sit down and say, okay, instead of speaking secondhand about what Jason Zimmerman does or what Tom Satran does, it's now my program, and what are my philosophies, and how are we going to do things? And, after that experience, I think I got better at it. And, then, like I said, applied for a bunch of different jobs. I was really, my goal was to be a Division III head coach. That was my experience as a player, of course. And, I love the D3 model of, you get to coach just tremendous kids from great families, care about academics. It's kids who are coming there who really love to play basketball. They're not there to be on ESPN. There's not, it's not always a packed house, and on ESPN, it's not always there for the glory. It's sometimes you're working in practicing in empty gyms, and sometimes, the crowds aren't always the biggest, but if you love to play and you love the game, the Division III level is a great one, and it's really competitive and gets better and better. So I really wanted to be a head coach, and I was very fortunate that by that time I turned about 30 years old. I'd had those 8 years of experience. The position came open. I'm not sure why they chose me. Thankfully I was an alum. I know there were some other great candidates for the job, and I hope it showed, and one of the things that maybe helped me get the position was just how amazing my experience was at WNL and how impactful it was at me, obviously, right? I loved being a student athlete at WNL. It's why I got into coaching, and, you know, to have that opportunity to come back to your alma mater, to represent the program that you played for, and all the relationships that I built with teammates of that time. I mean, what a dream come true. So it was perfect timing for me. And I'd been through a ton of interviews, and I felt like I was ready, and I'd finally sharpened my message and was ready to spread my wings, and had great 4 years under Coach Zimmerman at Emory. And I felt like, okay, now's pretty, you know, you're never going to be fully ready until you right, really do
absolutely.
It. But in it's terms
like
of having,
parent. It's like being a parent, right?
It's
like being
it. A parent. No, that nails it. Perfect analogy. But, in terms of as ready I could be, because I had such great mentors, both as a player and as a coach, that I had such great examples of, like I said, picking and choosing the best things, qualities that they do, and try and bring my own style and flair and personality into it. And the rest is history.
Was there ever a strange moment when you walked in the door and you're like, I spent 4 years here as a player kind of on one side of the curtain, and now I'm walking in and I'm going straight to the other side of the curtain from a coaching standpoint? Did you ever get like an odd feeling of just like, hey, this is kind of cool, this is different, this is interesting, there's something about shifting from the playing side to the coaching side here at my alma mater? Did you ever have a moment where you just stopped and kind of looked around and was like, wow, this is pretty cool that I played here and now I'm the head coach?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, it's you almost have to pinch yourself, right? It's hard to put into words how much it meant to me to get the position, and then, like I said, get to represent the great history of WNL basketball. And I thought a lot about when I got the job. I thought a lot about my teammates, and you know, a lot of my teammates are guys that, you know, we stood shoulder to shoulder there in basketball and competing together and building the program from, you know, 4 wins my first year to our senior years. We were playing in the ODAC championship game. That was a long, hard haul of togetherness and building that brotherhood and sticking it out as we were taking our lickings early in our career and thinking about how those relationships translated off the court, that, you know, those guys that I was shoulder to shoulder with in basketball were guys that I've walked through life with the rest of life. I mean, some of my best friends in the world are guys that I played WNL basketball with. Guys that were in my wedding and I theirs. And, you know, I mentioned Greg already, you know, the guy that was, I grew up with and the connection there, but, you know, Kirk Jones and Femi Kishimo and Al White and Jason Cimino and too many names to mention of just, guys that are, some of my best friends in the world. And then to think, wow, we played here together, you know, Coach Hutchinson brought us all together, and we got from all different parts of the country, right? We were, you know, guys from all over the place. WNL is a national school, so we had guys from up and down the East Coast and Texas and Midwest, and getting to meet all these great people and great families, and now I'm bestowed with the honor of kind of being the head coach and steering the program forward. It's something that I think about every day and try to keep as fresh as it was that first time that I realized, wow, I'm walking into this locker room and I used to sit in that chair. And now I got to go stand up at this whiteboard where I'm used to seeing Coach stand all the time. This feels like an out of body experience, but you get used to it. And like I said, I take so much pride in representing my teammates and my great friends that I had there. And think about that every day. And you think about it on the hard days too, when it's, you take a loss or you've been going for a while and everybody's tired and it's the middle of the winter and, you know, everybody's getting the cold, sicknesses getting around. It's like, you know what? We've got a larger responsibility because we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. So the fact that I've had to, I'm just so grateful that I've got in my head coaching experience that I've had, that I'm an alum, and I can't imagine, I've never been a head coach at a place I wasn't an alum. So it's just so great that I get to have the storytelling that I get to, and connection between the alums of past generations. Like we have, you know, and not this Saturday, but next, we're going to have our alumni back for an alumni game, and we're going to pack the stands with guys from different generations. And so cool to see the older guys coming back and connecting and supporting with the younger guys. And that's bigger than basketball. That's mentorship, and that's, you know, getting to know the alumni network for when our graduates move on and are pursuing careers and professional work. And it's just I've had such a blast connecting people and getting everybody rallied around our program.
I don't know what being an alum is worth, and I don't know if you can quantify it, but I know that being a head coach at a place where you played, it's worth something. I don't know what it's worth. I don't know what it does. I don't know if you could put a percentage on it, but I know it adds something to how much it means to that coach. And that's not to say, obviously, there's lots of guys who are coaching at schools and places that are not their alma mater. But I do think that there's some unquantifiable piece that being an alum, being coaching at your alma mater, I feel like it adds something to it. And I can hear it when you talk and anybody that I've talked to on the pod about coaching at their alma mater. There's just a little extra oomph that you get, I think, from coaching at your alma mater, because you just have, it's almost like you have double pride. You have pride in the program from when you're a player, and then you're obviously doubling down on that when you're a head coach. When you think back to getting that job for the first time and you're kind of looking ahead at what you envision the program becoming and where you want to take it, what did you think about as being one or two of the most important things that you knew you had to get done, or that you knew you had to create in order to get the program where you wanted it to go?
Yeah, I think great question. I think that it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason, as it comes down to relationships and getting good people in the room. And that's the number one thing that I knew from jump. And that's not a hard thing when you have such a quality institution like WNL. But I knew, you know, right from when I first got the job, okay, relationship building on all levels. And that is coming in right away and building relationships with the current players and letting them know that, you know, you're a part of this and you're my guy and we're going to do this together and let's build and develop. And there's going to be changes. It's going to be new, but I'm here to support you and get, you know, have you have a great experience here. So immediately with the group of players that you have, relationships with the alums, like we talked about already, so cool to be an alum myself. So there's already guys that I know that are going to be passionate and supporting us and backing us and cultivating that and growing our alumni network and support. Building relationships with recruits, because that's the next generation and the lifeblood of the program moving forward, is got to attract highly talented people. And, you know, I think more so than anything else, that has been whatever success we've had, and we're really proud of what we've accomplished. And I think we've done some great things here at WNL. It all comes back to the fact that I have been surrounded with tremendous people. And I want to shout out my assistant coaches here for a moment. When I got the job, Steve Phillips, who I had actually coached back at Mount St. Mary, and here we go again with the name game of the fraternity of coaching. Steve, I coached and recruited at the Mount. He was the assistant coach at WNL. So I got to go right in, and he was my first assistant coach. And I had somebody that I trusted implicitly, that I knew was smart and tough and caring and loyal to a fault. And he was going to help us, you know, mentor that first year together as my head is swimming and I'm trying to figure out what the heck to do as a head coach. And he was there as a, you know, to steer us in the right direction, and already had great relationships established with the players because he had been there a year. And then after he spread his wings and moved on to Williams College as an assistant, and is now the head coach at Kenyon, doing a great job there in his first year, hired Matt Williams. And Matt played at Davidson and was just unbelievable for us for 4 years. Matt's work capacity is second to none. I think sometimes you have to tell Matt, hey, maybe we should shut off the film here or the recruiting calls, and why don't you go have some time to yourself. And Matt was tremendous for 4 years, such a relationship builder, and just a servant leader and loyal, and such a relationship guy and such a knowledgeable basketball mind. And obviously coming from Coach McKillop and the tree there at Davidson, he had such a great basketball education in his career, so he could gift us with what he learned there. And we as a program try and take a lot from Davidson and from Emory with Coach Zimmerman. And then most recently Trey Livingston, who's my current assistant. Infectious, enthusiastic, huge personality. Everybody loves him. Impossible not to have joy being around him. Great knowledge of the game, makes it fun for everybody. You know, those three assistants that I've had have been stewards of our program and been mentors for our young guys and mentors for our players, and done such a great job. And, you know, in building what we're trying to accomplish, it's we've had great assistant coaches and we've had recruiting. We've identified guys that are high character and do things the right way on and off the court. Knock on wood, but I don't spend a lot of sleepless nights worrying about guys getting to class or doing the wrong thing. They do a great job on campus and in the community and in the classroom. And, you know, having those high character guys that are also driven. And I think an important thing too, that we identified in terms of those tremendous guys that I've gotten to coach is a true love of the game of basketball. And, you know, at WNL, you know, you're getting a great education, but there's a difference between saying I go to WNL and, oh yeah, I play on the basketball team versus I'm a basketball player at WNL. And you can do both with excellence, and you can do basketball and academics, both at the very highest level, and you can be a basketball player here. And I think we've identified guys who love to work at their craft, that are going to fight through adversity, that care about the team, that care about uplifting the program. So really most important thing and most important thing every day, and still the truth, and I think will be the truth, you know, God willing, they have me for as long as they're willing for decades, hopefully coaching here, is that it's all about getting really good people in the room and building a vision and a culture together and just working at it day by day. And that's it. And making sure that it's a relationship-based program where it's, you know, guys eating together and team meals and enjoying each other's company and living together and hopefully hanging out outside of basketball is really important. So relationships-based and then values-driven. You know, we're about doing things the right way. We're going to be coachable. We're going to be great teammates. We're going to compete the right way. We're going to focus on improvement. We're going to have great body language. We're going to celebrate each other's success. All the values that you want to instill in a program, that you get really good people marching towards that goal together, is that's how you accomplish big things.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, let me ask you about those two sets of people. Let's start with your assistant coaches, and then we'll jump back to a little bit about the recruiting and how you get the right guys in your program. But let's talk about the coaching staff first. How do you look at it for yourself? Obviously, we talked a lot about the guys that mentored you as your head coaches when you were an assistant. How do you think about that piece of it from your perspective now as a head coach, pouring into your assistants, giving them responsibility, helping them to prepare for the eventuality if they ever wanted to become the head coach of their own program? How do you think about developing your coaches?
Great question. I think that tying it back to that initial experience that I had at Mount St. Mary, where I was really thrown into the fire and learning a ton of things and had my hands in every piece of the program. I want to bring about that same experience for my assistants. So, and it's just me and one other full-time assistant. So there's really no other choice. So that works well. That fits nicely. Really no choice but to do it. So wanting to expose, you know, my assistants to every aspect of the program and the methodology and how I go about thinking about making decisions. So like you said, ultimately wanting, you know, if my assistants want to eventually become a head coach, is okay, here's how I view things. And it's not the only way to view things, and it's not the perfect way. And certainly I make plenty of mistakes, but look at how I try and think intentionally about how we go about building practice, how we take care of scouting, what is our philosophy in recruiting, all those things. I want them to be involved in that process. And I want to just have ongoing, continuous, daily conversations about, all right, how are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And how do we get better? And, you know, my assistants are, it's just me and them out there, like I said, in practice. So they're, you know, when we're breaking down drills, you know, he's coaching one end of the floor, I'm coaching the other. When we're scrimmaging or playing live in practice, he's coaching the white team, I'm coaching the blue team. So you have to act like a head coach. So I really want to think, I really do try and develop and think about, all right, here's all the ways you need to prepare and think about when hopefully someday you're in charge as a head coach. Here it is. Act like a head coach right now. And obviously as a head coach, I'm going to have final say on things, but when we're together, when we're in the office, when we're working together throughout the day, I want you to challenge me. I want your opinion on what you would do if you were in my seat. What should we do here? How should we approach preparing for this opponent? What do you think we need to do in practice today? How are the guys feeling? Do you think we need to go hard? Do you think we go a little bit lighter? Do you think we need to do more skill work? Is it our offense or defense that needs a little bit more fine tuning? What's your philosophy on that? So trying to ask those questions, trying to get them to think critically, and they've all been very smart, engaging guys and been great advisors to me. And then hopefully that prepares them for future success as they've gone on and spread their wings. Like I said, Steve Phillips is now at Kenyon and he's doing a great job in his first year as head coach. Matt Williams, I may have mentioned, is back at Davidson College where he played and doing an amazing job for that incredible program there. And obviously working with Coach Livingston right now, you know, that they make me better and that they teach me. And in that process, I hope we all get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great way to wrap up that little segment is, yeah, you want to be able to pour into them and hopefully they can learn from you. But I think in any situation, you're not taking advantage of it, right? If you're not learning from the people, even when you're the teacher, right? It's your students can teach you a lot. You're there yep. to theoretically teach them, but man, they teach you a lot. And as a coach, your players and your assistant coaches can certainly teach you a lot of things that you can gain from their experiences and their feedback and what they tell you and make you better all throughout yep. that process. So it's definitely something that I think it's a two-way street, not a one-way street for sure. No matter whenever you're talking about that relationship piece and that, again, whether you call it player, coach, student, teacher, coach relationship, you get the most out of it when it's a two-way street. There's no question about that. All right, let me ask you about the recruiting side of it with players. So one of the things that you said earlier is Washington Lee national recruiting. So when you start talking about the budget that you have for recruiting and putting together your list of guys initially and figuring out who's going to be a fit, how do you just get started with the process? Where does the initial list of names come from that you start to look at? How do you balance out watching a player AAU versus high school? Just go through the process of what you do from first identifying a player to taking them all the way through until they're actually enrolling on, you know, and they show up on your campus.
Well, WNL is a really prestigious academic school. So I think that the initial funnel is very simply, we want to find out as quick as we can as we're building a list of players, is this person a very high academic student? And that is going to help us narrow things down pretty expeditiously. So, you know, and to that end, as we are trying to build that list, we're going to be looking right away at academics and we're going to be targeting academic events, you know, and whether they are showcases or we've got a lot of mileage out of, you know, different Ivy League or Patriot Leagues that run camps and have all these high school students who are going there and high school basketball players who are wanting to play in the Ivy League or the Patriot League. And invariably the top few players at the camp might be able to play for some of those great programs. But then you have 180 other kids that are out there and they're getting looked at by all the, you know, the high academic Division III schools like us. And that's a crop of players that we're going to look to recruit and see if, like you said, see if the interest is there and see if, they sort of have the right characteristics that we're looking for in terms of being a value add to our program. I think that in the process, you know, it's hard. You want to get out as much as you can to see live because I think that there's so much gain from live scouting. It's, you know, through the film is nice. Highlights are nice for seeing things in 3 minutes and kind of that binary yes, no, that you can kind of tell right away with some highlight tapes. Hey, this person is above the threshold skill wise and athletically, there's somebody we got to be interested in. But when you go live and scout, there's just things that you can pick up on person that are harder to see in the film. You know, you can see body language. You can see, are they cheering on their teammates on the sidelines? Are they talking actively on the floor and engaged and focused? when the coach comes to coach them or give them constructive criticism? Is there eye contact? Are they listening? Are they applying what they're learning? You know, that in-person energy and presence that you can feel by seeing. So trying to get out to a lot of those events that we talked about, Ivy League events, AAU events, of course, seeing them play in their high school, but, you know, really just trying to, you know, like you said, the two-way street of coaches and players. Well, it's a two-way street of recruiting. Is you got to listen to recruits as well, right? We of course, you want to sell the product that you have. You want to talk about why Washington and Lee is such a great school, what the opportunities it can give you on and off the court and in the classroom, and then professional opportunities as you go on, what it can mean as a 40-year decision for your life. And you want to sell all those great things, how beautiful the campus is, all the facilities that we have that are top-notch for our level. You want to be constantly putting your best foot forward about talking about how great WNL basketball is, but at the same time, you got to listen. And you gotta ask questions and ask for feedback. And if there's enthusiasm in that process, well, then you know, well, this recruit is probably somebody that's interested. And if you're getting blown off by them or there's just canned answers, well, then you might know that maybe this person isn't super serious about wanting to come to WNL and play for our program. So I think, you know, figuring out those funnels of interest, academics, of course, and then just the basketball piece of it. And we like highly skilled players that are tough, that can dribble, pass, and shoot and make decisions on the fly. And like I said, guys that, and I think it's really important at our level. We talked about this too, in terms of, you know, the upbringing of developing as a player is, you know, is this a person that just loves to play games or do they love basketball? Meaning, do they work on their craft on their own? If I ask a recruit to, like you asked me earlier, well, take me through a workout, and just any workout that you do or the specific workouts that you like to do, and you hear silence on the other end of the phone because they don't have an answer, well, that person might not love basketball to the degree that's going to be necessary to fight through and be a great player at our level, at the Division III level, where a longer part of the year we are actually not in contact coaching them every day. You know, you have the summertime where they're not here, you know, at least here, they're not here on campus in the summer. And there's, you know, so from October 15th to the end of the year, we can help players get better. But if you want to be a great player, if you want to jump a level from good to great or great to excellent at our level, that's got to be self-motivated. And you got to be able to work on your game on your own. So if I talk to a recruit and he has no idea what his plan is for how he develops his game, well, that's a telltale sign that, you know, maybe this person is not going to develop the way someone else might be able to, that has a better answer, that has a plan, that has an enthusiasm and a passion for working on his craft in the off season.
Once you get them there, how do you build the relationships and the culture that clearly from our conversation I can tell are so important to you? How do you go about doing that day to day? What does that look like?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's WNL really sells itself when you come here. It's a beautiful place. So when we get guys to campus, we feel really good about, we can show you all the sites and bring you to a class and have you meet students and then spend time with our program and either play pickup with our guys if it's before the season or after season, or if it's during the year, you come watch a practice, come watch how we are together, and hopefully our enthusiasm and our infectious energy during practice is something that just resonates and that you can see and feel and touch, that makes recruits that come visit campus want to be a part of it. And the schools that we recruit against have unbelievable curb appeal, as in their beautiful places, and have unbelievable facts and figures that they can brag about, how tremendous the academic reputation is and alumni and the endowment and all these wonderful facts, that what we want to create when we're bringing recruits to be a part of our program is you want to feel our personality and the vibe that we have and how we have fun together and how we enjoy each other's company and how we compete really hard, but we're also having a good time and it's a great place to be and we're enjoying the whole process. So I think that's a really big part of, you know, the on-campus experience of recruits, and really having a mindset from our players. Our players do a great job of really welcoming in the recruits and taking pride and showing them our best foot forward and being honest when they answer, you know, ask questions and be honest and show who we really are, because we want to be honest because we like who we are. And if you don't like our honest answers, well, maybe there's another place that's better for you, but we're going to put our best foot forward and take pride in showing this is how we do things. We love who we are. We're proud of what we have achieved, but we're hungry to achieve even more. And having that as a real feeling that you get boots on the ground, a feel that can't be encapsulated in numbers and facts and figures. That's a culture. That's an atmosphere that you create. And then, you know, just kind of trying to continue that throughout the recruiting process, right to the very end, where, you know, texts and phone calls, and, you know, maybe I'm a little bit old school, but texting is convenient, and that's probably a lot easier way to get an answer nowadays. And some of the prospects, it might be the only way you can get them sometimes. But I have to talk on the phone to our top recruits because I want to get to know you better. I want to hear your story. I want to interact with you. There's no tone in text, so I love, you know, getting on the phone with our top guys and getting to know them better. And that's how you really decide if they're really interested and if this is the right fit for them to be a part of the program.
Once they sign on, and now you've got your team together, and obviously, if you're doing a good job of recruiting, you're bringing in a bunch of guys who believe they can play, and you obviously believe in them as players, but not everybody's going to get the minutes that they want. So how do you think about developing competitiveness within your team and keeping your practices highly competitive and yet still making sure that your team is bonded together along with or side by side with that competitive nature? Because obviously you need both. You need guys to push each other. You need guys to challenge one another in practice. And at the same time, when practice ends or when a game starts, you need everybody back together on the same page. So how do you think about that in terms of competitiveness and relationships, putting those two things together?
That's $1 million question, right? And that's developing players while at the same time we're trying to win now, but we also have younger players who you want to see keep growing and getting better and ultimately assuming the mantle of presumably, you know, older players that go on and graduate and cultivating that development and growth, and so that, you know, it's not just one class that you're good and then you fall apart. You hope that the classes behind you are all getting better and better and better, and you can keep, you know, develop a program rather than a team. So I think that's so key. I think that you use the word competitive, and I think that's a huge part of it. I think your practices have to be a balance between competitiveness and collaboration. So drills where guys are getting after one another, where it's intense and we're fighting and we're working hard to make each other better. And then let's do a drill where everybody's on the same team and we're doing a full court shooting drill, and let's see how many baskets we can make together. Right. So it's that learning how to be a good teammate and work with one another, and also understanding that actually competing against one another is a true sign of a relationship and true sign of friendship, is that I'm not going to go easy on you just because you're my buddy off the court. Is I actually care about you so much that I want to compete really hard to make you better. And I think cultivating that attitude is really important. And then I think it's important to build a culture and celebrate when teammates are really good at celebrating each other's success. So pointing out, and maybe it's a player on your team that plays less minutes, but he's up and he's high-fiving everybody and he's enthusiastic and he's jumping off the chair and the bench when we hit a three and yelling boom. That's got to be celebrated and highlighted in your program. That's got to be a part of your culture, because that helps make everybody feel like they have an important role, which they do, because everybody's valuable and everybody adds to the team. So, you know, celebrating those guys that are in there, that are competing every day, getting better, making our team better. Maybe there's a handful of players that are, you know, quote unquote, being on the scout team, simulating our next opponent for the guys at the top of the rotation to get ready for our next opponent. Well, that is not only a service to the team and to the players that are going to play the most minutes, getting prepared for what they're showing. But it's also an opportunity for those players that are on the scout team to get better, to expand their game, to learn a different scheme. Like, you know, we talked about all the different great coaches I got to work for. I got to learn different schematics and different offenses and different philosophies. Well, it's the same thing for a player that's coming up and gets to simulate a team who runs, you know, the mover blocker offense, which we don't run, but now we're going through it. And now you're learning about using a flare screen and you're getting to spread your wings and play a little bit because you're simulating the other team. That's going to make you a better player. So buy into that, right? We had a player And that's what great programs do. I think there was a player, Alex Foster at Emory, who didn't play very much early in his career. Maybe he was on the scout team as a freshman a little bit and playing there, and he got better and he worked at his game. And by the time he was a senior, he was a first team All-American Division III. So that's the vision, is that you come in and that you work and you pay your dues, and ultimately you get better and you contribute to the team, and you hope that eventually that role, you know, you're a star in your role, no matter what that is, whether it's to not play any minutes but compete in practice and be a great teammate, and you're a star in that role, and then you compete for more. And we talk about that all the time. And there's only one objective, and I think it's important to explain to our team, even though it's very intuitive, is like, the only thing that we think about in terms of who's going to play in this game today is what gives our program the best chance of success today. That's it, right? So that can feel very personal, but it's not. It's really, and we're not always perfect, right? We might not have the perfect, you know, you could argue that this player could have played a little bit more, a little bit less, or more shots for one guy, less for another. But our only goal is to win and to have success. And so everybody bought into that, and everybody's really important and valuable. And I think one of the things I tell our first years right away is comparison is the thief of joy. So you're a college basketball player probably because either A, you were one of the stars on your high school team, or B, you played on an unbelievable high school team where you played a role and were good enough to still play in college. Okay, those were great experiences. You might have been the star of the team. You might have been the MVP. You might have been all county, all conference, all state. Well, comparison is the thief of joy. You can't come into a new situation where you were the senior and you knew everybody and you were the head honcho, maybe the captain of the team, and then expect it to be the exact same experience when you're starting out as a first year, first day of college basketball, learning college basketball, which is a different game, which is bigger, faster, stronger against older players with new schemes. It's a process. So don't compare to what that experience was like. Doesn't mean set your goals low, and doesn't mean that first years can't come in right away and play, but it's understanding that it's a larger picture, and it's, you know, we have a phrase that we talk about all the time that's maybe heard before, but ETJ, enjoy the journey. And the journey isn't always linear, isn't always a little bit better every day. There's going to be ups and downs and peaks and valleys, but it's about working harder and getting better and taking pride and contributing the best that you can to the team's mission.
It's a really good explanation of how you put a team together and what it means to be a team, and more importantly, to be a teammate. And I think that any coach could strive towards that vision that you just described. And I think you did a really good job of clarifying and then giving concrete examples of what it looks like to be competitive and at the same time be completely bought into what it means to be a teammate, and then consequently to be a team from a coach's perspective. So very well said. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance. I'm going to ask you one final question here, and two-parter. So part one, when you think about the next year or two and you look ahead, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then the second part, what brings you the most joy about what you get to do each and every day? So first, your biggest challenge, and then your biggest joy.
Biggest challenge is going to be an easy one. It's going to be a shout out to the ODAC Division III Men's Basketball Conference. That's the challenge. Incredible league full of tremendous coaches who have built programs. Dave Macedo, Tom Palumbo, Josh Merkel, Clay Nelly, I'm not going to name everybody, but they're all fantastic coaches who have developed tremendous Division III programs. And our league, you know, you can always squabble about who's the best or who's first, second, third. Well, we're in that conversation. We're in that conversation loudly this year. And the biggest challenge is how tremendous our competition is. And it's motivating, though, and it makes us better. And we wouldn't want it any other way, right? To be the best, you got to go compete against the best. And we get to do that night in, night out in the ODAC. So I think the biggest challenge is just how good these other teams are that we play.
Absolutely.
They're awesome and great players, and we love it. And like I said, you got to relish, you know, we tell recruits if you want to come play in the ODAC, you better be ready to come compete, because that's what it is every night. And so that's the biggest challenge. And then I believe you asked my biggest joy.
Yep.
I just think that being with great people every day, feeling like I can make a difference and a positive impact in young people's lives is always going to be the most, you know, just feeling like going through the ups and downs of a basketball season and the times together and, you know, being on the bus rides and watching film with the team and watching film individually and having individual meetings and chit-chatting with guys on the side and spending time off the court, that I'm a positive mentor and that I'm hopefully helping our players develop as young men. So when they go off and they leave WNL's beautiful campus, that they go off and be great fathers and husbands and doctors and lawyers and CEOs and all the great things that they're going to go on to be. So making a difference and seeing those happy faces in the locker room when you come in after a big win, there's nothing like that, because you know that you put in the work and that you earned it and that you worked hard, and seeing everybody's joy together that we're accomplishing great things. But really that feeling, that joy, that especially over 4 years, and we've had such a great history and tradition of guys in my tenure of sticking it out for 4 years, we've lost very, very, very few players over 4 years. And I'm extremely proud of that, that those guys will look back on it and say, I'm so glad that I got this experience. I grew as a person. I grew as a basketball player. I developed great relationships with my teammates and coaches, and I have these unbelievable memories, and I'm going to carry through these relationships to the rest of my life, just like hopefully they see that I do with my teammates that are some of my best friends in the world. So that's really all I could ask for, and that's the joy of being a coach.
Absolutely. Before we finish, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, whether you want to share email, social media, website, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I will jump back in and wrap things up.
Absolutely. My email is probably the best way to get me, and it's on the website at WNL, Generals Athletics Men's Basketball, but I can read it out quickly right now, is McHugh, which is my last name, McHughC at WLU.edu, McHughC@WLU.edu, and love to hear from anybody. And thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Absolutely, Chris. Cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. Truly appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.